Hello and welcome to the Valor Podcast. We're entering the 15th year of the global war on terror. In that time, the United States has deployed more than 2.5 million men and women to defend our nation. They have gone to countries as Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and some other places that we don't even know about. All of those men and women have families, and some of those family members are under the age of 10. Sometimes it's difficult for military personnel to explain what they're doing to a younger age. There's a new idea that two veterans came up with that will incorporate reading and military tradition. But first, let's get to our sponsors. I'd like to thank our show sponsor, Tom Rowan. He's one of our first fans and listens to our podcast all the time. So thanks for sponsoring our podcast. And fun fact, he's also a Marine Corps veteran. So thanks, Tom. United States Marine Corps pilot and Iraqi war veteran, Major David Dixon is the author of two best-selling books. One is called Goodnight Marines, a tale of a little boy taking on the imaginative adventure of the Marine Corps. Major, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Nick, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
When I saw this book, my first thought was, you know, I started like singing the Marine Corps hymn, and I bet you have all kinds of stories from people purchasing this book, and whether it's grandma or mom purchasing it for little Tommy there.
I do, and that's been one of the most fulfilling parts of this project is getting feedback from my customers, and whether they do that on, they'll leave comments on Facebook maybe, or reviews on Amazon, or I'll get random emails. And it really made, this project took so long. I know if you've never published a book before, people may just think that I'm slinging out nursery rhymes and can do it pretty easy, but it actually took several years to put this together. I first wrote the poem back in 2012. And then, you know, I've been, I'm a reserve officer in the Marine Corps now, but I was active duty at the time. And so I was just doing this on nights and weekends and trying to find an illustrator and put the whole project together. And so, what some people just see as a 32-page, you know, children's book, I see thousands of hours of my life over several years and just and a lot of emotional investment in it. And so when I do get this feedback from customers saying how much the book means to them or that it helped them connect with their son or their nephew or their daughter or their grandfather, in some instances, I got a really heartwarming email from a customer recently about her father, who is a veteran, and he's advanced in age and in a care facility. And she brought the book in to read to him. And although it sounded like he suffers from dementia or something and doesn't recognize a lot of things, but he immediately recognized a lot of the symbols for the Marine Corps and the tradition she was talking about. And it was a way for this lady to connect with her elderly father. And so stories like that, it make it all worth it. I mean, that's the reason I did this project. And it's been really, really fulfilling to hear the good things that are happening from it.
How did that come about of, hey, I'm going to write a book? I mean, did somebody read to you when you were little that, you know, kind of made an impact on you? Or was it a moment in your military career where you're like, you know what, I can do something for, you know, specifically kids, but, you know, maybe all ages?
I've always enjoyed writing, and even as a little kid, my Marine friends like to give me a tough time about it. But I won a poetry contest when I was in seventh grade for the cultural arts fair. And for some reason, I always enjoyed writing. And you might not expect that when you first meet me or any other Marine. You know, we've got these goofy haircuts, and you know, we're often look like big jocks, but I've always enjoyed it. And then several years ago, my wife and I were talking about starting a family, and looked in to see what children's books might be available for Marines. And there weren't a lot. There's a few out there, but none that were a traditional children's book. They really tried to make an emotional connection about the Marine Corps to the audience. And so I had the idea, and then it just kept marinating in my mind. And eventually I thought, you know what, I'm going to take a risk and really put my heart and soul into this and see if it works out. So it's been, like I said, several years in the making, and so it wasn't one particular, you know, one particular aha moment where the light bulb went off. It's just something that I thought about, and then at some point I just decided to do it.
Take us through the kind of the synopsis of it. I know I kind of gave a little bit of brief background, but you have a lot of Marine Corps traditions and you know, kind of history within the book.
I do, and that was my plan, is to have something that on its surface looks that's not too intimidating for a child. So I wanted to tell about the culture and traditions of the Marine Corps through a story. And so Goodnight Marines is about a young kid whose dad is deployed overseas to Afghanistan. And it starts out, he's sitting in his room, and his room is adorned with all this military memorabilia that his father left him so that he could feel connected to his son while he's away. So he's got little toy tanks and planes and a poster of the silent drill team and, you know, a little walkie-talkie and a compass. And as the kid says goodnight to the picture of his father, and he says goodnight to all of the toys that his dad left him, they come alive in his imagination. And so instead of it being a small little tank on his floor, you know, it's a big tank, or a little helicopter hanging from his ceiling, you know, it's a big helicopter or a big plane flying over a moon that has the eagle globe and anchor, which is the Marine Corps symbol, inside the moon. And as the kid says goodnight to everything, it teaches about the culture and traditions of the Marine Corps. And I think the real spirit of the book ends on the last page.
Don't ruin it. No, I'm just kidding.
I won't ruin it for the audience, but it comes to a very heartwarming ending. That's all I'll say. And one other important point about the book is that the kid's best friend is a stuffed animal named Tuffy the Hound. And for Marines, or if you know about Marine Corps tradition, there is a legend that in the Battle of Belleau Wood in World War I, that the Marines fought so ferociously that the German soldiers called us Teufelhunden, which is German for devil dog, supposedly. So whether that story is true or not, no one really knows, but the Marine Corps has taken that on and used that as one of our many monikers, and so we'll call each other devil dogs. But Teufelhunden is a difficult word to pronounce, and so this kid names his little stuffed animal dog Tuffy the Hound. And as the kid goes to sleep, Tuffy the Hound is with him on his bed, and symbolizing, you know, the Tuffy wears the drill instructor cover, the Smokey Bear cover of the drill instructor, which is symbolizes, you know, the albeit sometimes tough love that the drill instructors show to Marines as they become, you know, parental figures during boot camp. And so he's the protagonist of the book, and it's something that the kids are able to connect with. It's really neat.
And going with the Marine Corps tradition, I love the devil dog story. I know all Marines, they're like, you know, there's that pride in that story of, you know, inflicting the fear into the enemy. But one of the mottos in the Marine Corps is improvise, adapt, and overcome. What are some things that, with this project, I know you kind of touched on them, that maybe were setbacks or just kind of like, well, I don't know if this is really going to get off the ground. And I know publishing a book, it's a, you know, you almost have to be a doctor major.
Oh gosh, the setbacks are manifold, and just the ups and downs. And if you talk to any artist, I mean, when you're writing a book, or maybe even doing a painting, or I'm sure if you talk to an actor or a ballet dancer, they would all at some point be self-conscious or be insecure about what they're doing. And then, you know, you get to those low points and you think, oh, this is stupid. No one's going to read it. No one's going to, you know, people are going to laugh at me, blah, blah, blah. But then you just keep going back to, for me, I kept going back to, no, this is something that I want to do, and something that I think my customers, my audience will really appreciate. So I initially pitched the idea to some of the bigger publishers. You know, I got online and I filled out their forms and I even talked to a few book agents and ran into honestly some dead ends, which was a little discouraging. I mean, the children's book market is it's a crowded space, and the book agents that I talked to, they didn't really understand. They're like, well, we don't know what's a devil dog, who is Chesty Puller, you know, what is the a lot of the stuff, a lot of the traditions, if you don't understand them, you know, they just don't make sense. And so, and furthermore, when the little bit of contact I had with the publishers, they said, well, we'll want to, you'll have to use our in-house illustrator, you know, if we pick this up. And it was very important to me, Nick, that this book be illustrated by a veteran. And so I wanted it to be written by a veteran, illustrated by a veteran, authentic, cover to cover. And so, you know, those were some discouraging times at the beginning of the project, but then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do this myself. And so I started my own company, Callsign Enterprises, LLC, and that's the company, that's the medium through which I have published and printed the book. And so, yeah, I mean, getting tens of thousands of copies of a book and distributing them, and you know, I had to find a printer and a professional logistics warehouse, had to start a website, and this all took a ton of time. And it feels like nothing ever goes right, as with any project. But I just had to keep persevering, and as you said, improvise, adapt, and overcome, and take my book, which, you know, I look at it and oftentimes, you know, I only see what's wrong. And I say, oh, I wish I would have, you know, said this or done this for the drawing. And you've always got 1,000 more corrections, and you could work for years and it would never be, you know, the exact perfect everything you want. But eventually I got it to a point where that I thought was, I don't want to say good enough, but I thought that it was a good product that I was proud of. And so I thought, you know what, I'll put it out there. And even still to this day, there's ups and downs. I get customers who will write and say, oh, my book arrived damaged, or my book never arrived. And they're more logistical, problems that I run into now as it's tough business trying to distribute, like I said, a lot of books over mailing them across the world and making sure that they arrive on time. So every day, as any small business owner will tell you, there's always ups and downs. But in the end, I'm glad we did this project, and Phil and I, it's something we've really enjoyed.
And so, do you have like a warehouse in your garage full of books, or I mean, how
are you? No. As I said, I'm a reserve officer in the Marine Corps, and I'm more importantly a full-time husband and father. So no, I outsource that. There is a professional.
Smart
my
man.
Books are printed. My books are printed in Dallas, and then I have a professional logistics warehouse that I partner with in Dallas. And so after the printings, they ship them there, and then we had to set up an electronic interface between my page on Amazon and my website, which is www.goodnightheroes.com. And so that all, of course, took a lot of time and a lot of planning. But now it's a really great system. It's totally automated. So whenever someone orders from Amazon or from my website, it goes directly to the warehouse. They fulfill it. They send the tracking number and all the salient information to the customer, and I'm able to, you know, focus on bigger picture stuff like creating more content, maybe not other books, or doing things to such as this, and engage with my customers.
And you touched on being a father and a husband and all that, but some of the credit goes to your wife. I was reading she found your illustrator, which was a veteran. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, my wife is the most incredible person in the world, and she is an extremely talented writer. She graduated with highest honors from Johns Hopkins University with a degree in medical and scientific writing, and also in French, with a minor in vocal performance from the Peabody Institute. In addition to her master's degree from Georgetown that she got in communications, culture, and technology, also graduating with highest honors. And so I I have her to thank for everything in my life, but certainly for this book. And she was, among many things, she was very encouraging about it. So whenever I would get discouraged or get bummed out, oh, this will never work, or this, the printing has gone wrong, or the files got deleted on the computer, whatever, anything that, of all the many things that could go wrong, no, she'd always encourage me and tell me to stick with it. And then she definitely serves as a proofreader when I give her the manuscript and she goes over it and makes very helpful suggestions. And then we were looking for illustrators, and we were both on our laptops Googling around at the time. Nick, I was stationed at CENTCOM, United States Central Command, in Tampa, Florida. I did a six-month stint there from 2013 to 2014. And we were just looking around for different artist portfolios, and she found Phil. And then she's like, hey, come look at this. And so we start clicking around, and his stuff is amazing. He is just one look at his work, and he is a world-class talent. He worked for Disney formerly, and now runs his own operations there in Sarasota, Florida. And he's a graduate of the Ringling Design School, which is one of the top programs in the country. So yeah, she found his portfolio online. I contacted Phil, and then I pitched him my vision and over email and a couple phone calls, and said, hey, I want to create a book to enable Marines to connect with their families. And he loved the idea. He bought in, Nick. He bought in. Phil bought in 100%. And pretty soon he was, I felt like more emotionally invested in the project than I was. And he worked, late night. Pulling all-nighters, doing everything he had to do to make it a product that we're proud of, and we're proud to put our name on, and proud to give out to Marines. So yes, in many ways she has. My wife Jackie has made this project come together.
And I know this book is primarily targeted towards children and kind of bridging the gap, and there's all that cool things where it comes with, reading literacy and things like that. But whenever I take my kids to veteran events, we go to a lot of them, and the kids run up, and it seems like there's that instant bond with the veteran and the child. Why do you suppose that veterans are so drawn to children?
Well, that's a good question. And I think it works both ways. Children are also drawn to veterans. Maybe it's the uniform. Maybe it's the discipline and the confidence that hopefully we exude. And you see the same thing with firefighters and police officers, that the kids, love to go talk to them. And kids are probably very interested. They love, trains and planes and all the big equipment that we fly. And so often at these, if you go to an air show or you go to a museum, they'll have, replicas of the tanks and the vehicles, and the kids think that's really cool. And so why are veterans drawn to kids? I think deep down, everyone joins the military, Nick, for different reasons, but deep down it is about serving, and it is about protecting our culture and our country and our constitution and our way of life. And you see that. When you see a little kid, you say, hey, this is the future of the United States of America. And so it's our duty to engage the younger generation. And sometimes that isn't always easy. Marines don't necessarily emote very well all the time. And it's hard to talk about everything that we do. And that was one of the visions behind this project, was to give, a big old veteran, a big Marine, who maybe isn't great at connecting with his niece or his granddaughter or his nephew or son, as an easy way for them to sit down and share a moment together.
What were some of the things that, I guess the thing is that I see, like you were saying, the Marines and, Army, Coast Guard, Air Force, Navy, all those guys and girls, the stereotype gets cast, oh, they're just, yoked up guys and females that are just alpha males and they're jerks and all that. But when you really, you know, it was some of the most intriguing and thought-provoking conversations I've had are with veterans or even, you know, guys that are serving that we're just sitting there talking. And why do you think the veteran and the service member has like kind of a deep outlook on life?
Great question, Nick. Well, to your first point, the stereotype sometimes is true. I mean, you get like I said, a lot of meatheads, a lot of jocks who join the Marine Corps, because I mean that's what we offer. You know, is we offer many things. One of which is the chance to do a lot of really, you know, athletic and adventurous stuff, running around in the woods and shooting guns and flying planes and driving tanks and stuff that guys who like myself who played sports or football in high school, that things, you know, you would be attracted to that. It's the same kind of locker room mentality that in a locker room, the brotherhood and that fellowship and that camaraderie that you get with a sports team, because at its core, being in the military is an athletic, you know, we call ourselves professional warrior athletes. That's in our doctrine. So there is a little bit to that stereotype, but also what you said, Nick, about having those deep intellectual conversations. A lot of veterans, this is not just an academic discussion when you're talking about foreign policy or you're talking about military strategy or any of the things that that our politicians are debating. This isn't some esoteric academic discussion that someone else is, you know, for someone else. This is real life and something that we are going to have to maybe participate in. And so there's often a lot of thought and reflection and passion when we're talking about international affairs or whatever is going on in our country. So, and this surprises some folks. When I was in graduate school, I was often the only Marine or one of the only veterans that that any of my classmates had ever met or interacted with, and they had the same sort of stereotypes. You know, every veteran's a crazy dude with PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress, and or they often didn't know that military officers had to go to college, and they were confused. They're like, why are you in graduate school if you're in the military? And they and I was like, no, and I got my bachelor's degree, and so that's part of the problem, Nick, in our country today, is that there's only a very small percentage of citizens actually serve in the military. You know, maybe it's 1% or 2%, but there's a real disconnect. And unless you come from a military family or live in a military town like where I lived in Tampa, or you lived there, I live right now in New Orleans, or in Albuquerque, like you said, where you are, and there's a military base, it's likely that you don't have any interaction. And the only thing you know about the military is what you've seen in movies or on TV. So that's something that hopefully veterans can do a good job with and take initiative on, is to engage not just little kids like we talked about earlier, but to engage everybody, all Americans, and let them know, hey, this is what this is my veteran, this is my experience in the military, and this is what it means.
And how would you suggest people go about, you know, getting in touch and talking with what people do? I know the term is MOS, and that's the military occupation of what the person did. You know, like how would you suggest, maybe from young to old, on how a person can connect with a service member or a veteran to really understand, like we were just talking about?
It just simply to ask. If you've got someone listening to your podcast and they know that there's a veteran in their neighborhood or at their office, just to say, hey, tell me about your experience in the Navy or the Coast Guard, or just talk to them about it, just like you would want anyone to talk to you about your job. And for the most part, vets will open up and you know, talk about their experience. So sometimes people are intimidated or apprehensive about talking to vets because they're like, oh, I don't want to bring up a sore subject or make them have a flashback or whatever reason they come up with for their insecurity. But I would say just reach out, take a little initiative, and you'll almost 100% find that that any veteran is going to be willing to sit down and chat with you. And hey, everyone likes talking about themselves, Nick. And so if you go up to pretty much any human being and when you ask them about their life, you're probably going to get a response. So I would say to any American, find the veterans in your neighborhood or in your community and just reach out to them and just say thanks, even if you disagree. And there's the wars we're fighting today are no different from many of our wars in the past, and that they're sometimes controversial, and there's a lot of political opinions both ways about them. But even if you disagree with the war or the politics or the decisions behind it, you can always just say thank you, and you can just say, hey, tell me your story. And I think any veteran would be willing to engage with that.
Exactly. And then why don't you give us a little bit of background about your flying career in the Marines? And I know, I just reading on your background, you were a Cobra pilot.
Right. I am still currently a Cobra pilot in the reserves. And so, gosh, where to start? Well, I got my desire, I guess, to join the military probably started in high school and college. I had some family members. My grandfather was in the Navy and served in during the World War II and Korean time frame. My uncle had an uncle in the Air Force and another in the Navy. The one who was in the Navy was a pilot. And then I did a study abroad when I was in college. I went to Texas A&M University, and then my junior year was the fall of 2000. Studied in Spain for a semester, taking classes as an enrolled student at the University of Salamanca, taking classes completely in Spanish, and being away from the United States I was gone maybe 6 months. But even that period of time really made me appreciate what we have here and made me grow up and realize that despite, a lot of things we gripe about our country, it's it's the best option out there for sure. And so I came back and started looking, as a junior in college about what I'm going to do when I graduate. And then in 9/11 happened, and I had some close friends who were joining the military. And it's something, that had really been, I guess, pulling at my heart. And I had a professor at Texas A&M named Jim Olson, who was a mentor of mine. He was at the Bush School of International Affairs, and I took several of his classes. And he said something to me that I'll never forget. And I was talking to him about, maybe not joining the military, maybe going into business instead, because I was in the business program at Texas A&M. And he told me, he said, David, if you have the desire to serve and you don't do it, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. And I thought about that, Nick, and I said, you know what? He's right. And I can always go into business. I can always go do whatever I want to do. But the time to join the military is really, the younger the better, because it's a physically demanding profession. And so I did, and I took joined the Marine Corps, and then took an air contract and went to flight school, I guess, in 2003. And I was assigned to fly Cobra helicopters. It was my first choice of helicopters, and I got stationed out in San Diego. And it was really a great time. Everything that you kind of dreamed about, being a military officer would be like. I was living with a couple of my buddies. We had this really cool house on the beach, and we were flying helicopters all week and then surfing on the weekends, and we'd go up to Big Bear and snowboard, and we're just living a really cool life. We thought, man, we were just having a great time learning how to fly and being young Marine officers. And then, of course, we started deploying, going back and forth to Iraq. I did two tours in Iraq, one from 06 to 07 as part of the troop surge, and then went back again in 2008. And then I also did two tours on U.S. Navy ships as part of Marine Expeditionary Units. So mine specifically were the 15th MEU and the 31st MEU, which is in Okinawa, Japan. So that was kind of my story. Flying a lot over in the combat zone and on the ship, and doing some pretty cool stuff on the ship. International training exercises. We worked with the Indian Navy in 2006. We did some exercises with the Thai Royal Navy and the Philippine Air and in the Philippines. So it was a great experience. I mean, I got to see the world, made some of them, you know, made the best friends in my life, and did a service to my country that, you know, that I hope made some sort of difference. And then after that, I got a really great opportunity to get selected for graduate school. So I went to grad school for 2 years and then did, a payback tour working at our university. So the Marine Corps has a university. It's Marine Corps University in Quantico, Virginia. It's accredited by the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, the same accreditation body that does basically every school, every college from Texas up to Virginia, to include Texas A&M or Duke or UVA or any of those schools. Marine Corps University is one of them. And I worked as a curriculum manager, you know, overseeing some of the curriculum development and other things we were doing. And then I briefly mentioned that I did a 6-month tour at Central Command in Tampa, Florida, and then I transitioned to the reserves in 2014, and now I'm stationed in New Orleans, my wife and I. So we've been here about coming up on 2 years.
That's an incredible story with a lot of different places that you've gone. You've traveled the world, like the pamphlets say. I want to go into the deployments. What
Sure.
is it like flying in combat? I know there's a lot of factors, a lot of dangers, weather, you know, ground and all that. I mean, you pretty much have an overall aerial view of the combat area.
You do. Well, the helicopter, you're not flying quite as high as you are in, you know, maybe a jet or a cargo plane, but it's a stressful environment. I mean, obviously in a place like Iraq, I was there in the summertime, it's extremely hot. And then, the missions you're doing, you know, you're flying at night on night vision goggles, and it's a complicated dynamic environment with, obviously, the threat of you or the Marines on the ground that you're supporting coming in harm's way every time. So it's stressful, but it's also you learn a lot, and you have to grow up really quick. You have to develop your communication skills, your decision-making skills, your leadership, your crisis management, things that you know that it's almost impossible to get that experience in anywhere else. I don't know what other questions you may have about it, but yeah, it was tough. It was very stressful, but overall, I think we did, both times I was over there, I thought we did great work and saw a lot of positive impacts from our efforts. And, I'm proud of the job we did.
And I have read different books and heard people talk, but when ground troops see the helicopter, it's almost like the guardian angel. It because you guys can effectively get to places and call out where things are and all that. Did you ever have those type of moments where you're like, I'm not to sugarcoat it and hype it up, but you know, I'm really saving these troops on the ground?
We did several times, and not to go into too many specifics, but I did get the chance to in 2006. It was probably in late December 2006, and we were working in Western Anbar Province, and there were some Marines who were taking fire, and we were able to come and get them out of a bad jam. And one of the Marines had been shot in the ribs, and He wasn't killed. It hit his plate, but I think he was banged up pretty bad. And then later on, by just circumstance, I ran into him in 2008 when I was back in Iraq. And to get that handshake and smile, and then to hear an honest man, thank you guys for helping us that day. It meant a lot. And then And a lot of times when I was over there in 2008, Nick, it was pretty quiet. And so we did a lot of reconnaissance missions. We did, looking for IEDs and things like that, where we weren't necessarily directly engaging the enemy, but we were helping the Marines, stay out of harm's way. So it is fulfilling as a pilot to know that our whole job, Nick, is to support the Marines on the ground and to help them accomplish their mission. And so whenever we're able to do that, and then, for them to say thank you or to let us know how we help them out, it was very fulfilling to know that you're doing your job and you're helping someone else maybe get through a tough situation.
And just to close this all up, that's the beauty of the military. You won't see that person that has helped you out or gotten you out of that jam, but your piloting and maybe other pilots and even other ground troops did some things for somebody that day on maybe their worst day or even their day. But
yeah,
I think that's one of the coolest things about military life is that you don't know when your brother or sister are gonna help you out, but years down the road there's that reunion and there's that handshake, like you said.
Yeah, and it might be, or it might not even be with someone that you were helping. And I'll tell a quick story. I met when I first went to graduate school. I went to church one Sunday and was just chatting with people, and they said, "Oh, you're a Marine here. We got a Vietnam veteran over here." And so I went over and introduced me, and so I started chatting with him. And he said, "Oh, so what do you do? What do you do in the Marines?" So I'm a Cobra pilot. And literally at that moment, his countenance changed, and he said, "Cobras saved my life." He said, "The reason I'm talking to you today, David, is because of Cobra pilots who say." And he told a rather dramatic story of an encounter they had in Vietnam. And so even though I obviously wasn't there for that experience, it helped us establish a connection, and I hope that that someday, years from now, that there's a Marine out there saying, "Wow, the Cobras in Iraq or Afghanistan and the other pilots, they really supported us and they helped us complete our mission." Like I said, it's a tough job, but it's rewarding when you're able to do it well.
And so, David, thank you so much for the time you spent with us and sharing the story about your struggles of getting a book published and finally getting published, and then the history of your military background, a little bit of Marine history to thrown in for it as good measure. And I just appreciate your time and everything that you're doing for our country and making it a cool thing to read to the kids and even future generations about the history. And I hope that there's a lot of things that come out of it and it helps start that conversation.
I hope so. And Nick, I really appreciate you having me. And thanks for doing this Valor podcast. I know that putting together something like this is not easy. And it's probably just like my book, it took me a long time to put together. I know setting up all the administration and the logistics and all the everything that it takes to put a radio broadcast out to the world. So thank you for doing this, and thank you for providing a medium for veterans to tell our story and to engage and to hopefully get the word out there of what we're doing. So I really appreciate you, appreciate your team and your audience, and I'm honored to have a couple minutes with you guys.
Oh, definitely, Major. All right, thanks for listening to the Valor Podcast. Make sure to like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or any podcast management app. Visit our webpage at thevalorpodcast.com. Finally, find your mission. There are many veteran organizations, nonprofits, and veterans needing your help. I promise you'll make a great friend. Read to your kid tonight. I promise you'll have a great time.